It's afternoon, right? Good afternoon and welcome to my new time slot for the whole... Not for the whole holiday. It's just today that I'm going to be sitting here in the afternoon, and from tomorrow until the 9th, from tomorrow until the 2nd, I'm going to be shifted to the morning slot. That's where you're going to be listening to me. So if you are going to be interested into what I'm going to be talking about here, which is a collabo or a merge of two of my favorite things that I like to do most, and that is humor and history. Those two. Do they make my life complete? Now, assuming that someone's daughter is not listening and plotting my demise as we speak, That's just some heads up. Today you're going to be listening to my new show, wonderful show with a wonderful name called Time Machine. Why did I call it that? Well, let's start from there. I like history and I like geopolitics. Now, because of that, every time, I try as much as possible to keep up with current events, but that's just the problem. Current events are just, well, that current. They are just focused on what happened yesterday, what happened, maybe a month ago, maybe last year. That's as far back as they go. But here's the thing. Most of the events that we find ourselves witnessing, even those ones that started today or that started yesterday, have a lot of historical reference we could actually draw wisdom from. Like they say, those that don't learn from history are bound to do what? Repeat it. Now, I don't like repeating myself. I don't like repeating history. It's just that my stammering self find myself caught up in a loop of, doing what I don't like. Repeating myself over and over again. Now, let's start with a few quotes. If you're going to listen to Helmut, get a sense of humor or you are not going to enjoy any bit of it. Why did I come up with this? It's because every time that I read headlines, I keep going, okay, this sounds familiar. Why does it sound familiar? Oh, look, it's similar to this event that happened during this time period in this part of the world. Why does this look familiar? It's because it's similar to this event that happened in this time period in this part of the world. Take what's going on, the current tension between Venezuela and the U.S., for example. I wanted to talk about that for 2 weeks. Except every time that I tend, every time that I read a newspaper, or whether it's in hard copy or soft copy, or just watch news headlines on that, they just keep focusing on, you know what's the most annoying thing about that whole tension between the U.S. and Venezuela is every news headline I see is, we don't know what Donald Trump is thinking. Really? First of all, it would be weird if you knew what he was thinking. He will have to tell you what he's thinking. You are not a mind reader. Therefore, that's really shocking to me. I don't know what you are thinking. That doesn't shock me. Why are you shocked that you don't know what Donald Trump is thinking? Yes, he's the president. And his bottom line, he's a human being just like you. Unless you are a mind reader, which something I've come to learn is that most people that claim to be are mostly liars or prophets. But the point is, you can't know what someone is thinking. You will have to ask them and cross your fingers and hope they don't lie to you, which more often humans do, it turns out. Now, here's the thing. We don't know what Donald Trump is thinking. Well, that's true. So, we don't know what decision he's going to make next. Again, same thing. You don't know what he's thinking. He's rallying the army around Venezuela. That's actually where I like, You know, that's why I like to, you know, to cover comedy into everything I do. It's my get out of jail free card. You know how politicians, make laws and then they give those laws to, you know how politicians make laws and then, you know, to be, is it to be a burden or to be abiding, to be followed? Pardon my government school English, to be followed by all other citizens. And then politicians sit there and start going, all right, how do we make sure that our own citizens don't hold us against these laws that we have just made? Because if we just leave it like this, it's going to be a trap. So they will want us to be held accountable because we made the laws. It will just be unfair for us to make laws that we are not following ourselves. Then one very smart politician came up with the most brilliant idea under the sun. That actually it's not a word, it's a phrase. It starts with diplomatic. It's a word. Immunity. My God, diplomatic immunity. Parliamentary immunity. Presidential immunity. Immunity for me is nothing but a get out of jail free card. For people that made rules, they don't want to follow. You know, as a president, as a sitting president, even if he was corrupt, he could not be prosecuted because that's what the rules say. Say what? And then those the rules. Okay, now let's say, that's so unfair. And you know what they say? Well, so is life. Life generally is unfair because, in whatever world you go to, on this, in whatever country you go to on this planet, you will find, those ones that can afford poloni and those ones that can barely afford fat cakes. Now the thing is, those ones that can afford poloni use their money and acquired power because money and power are mutually exclusive. You find that those ones that can afford poloni will make all the rules and they more often figure out ways to make sure that their rules does not impact them in a same way that that it does anyone else that cannot afford poloni. Genius. Life really is unfair. Turns out. What can we do? Well, those of us that are broke, at least we can laugh about it, and that's what I'm here. That's what I'm here for. So. My quote of the day. I have three quotes for you here. Quote number one is attributed to one nutritionist enthusiast, but he's a doctor by profession, Dr. Andrew Saul, who said, "Good health makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't make a lot of dollars." Now, Dr. Andrew Saul is one of those people that can easily be described as a critic of Big Pharma, aka the modern pharmaceutical industry that is more profit-driven than health-driven. Don't throw away your tablets. Don't throw away your tablets. Just relax and just read between the lines and laugh and forget everything. Moving on. So, it's true. Good health makes a lot of money. But it does. Good health makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't make a lot of money. Now, let's face the reality. If everyone on this planet exercised, ate healthy, and did not produce all this bunch of fumes that ruins the environment, and everyone was healthy, what do you think would happen to the pharmaceutical industry? And that. Somewhere around 2010 there, remember 2010, 2009, 2010 there, was already a half a trillion dollars worldwide conglomerate. And you're asking yourself, if everyone was healthy, what would happen to the pharmaceutical industry? Shapo Kanyama would not like that. The Minister of Health would not have a job. You do realize that. You know all those deputy, secretary, who do you work for and you gladly walk around, you know, I work for the Minister of Health. If people were healthy, you'd be jobless. Man, reality bites deep. Now, Let's say if all the Tura boys just woke up and decided, you know what, we are no more touring. We will just be choir boys from now on. Oh yeah, which police officer do you think will have a job? I'm not saying, you know, we have to just increase the number of Tura boys so that we can just increase the number of police officers to create employment. All I'm saying is, there's a lot of reality we don't want to face because we speak in diplomatic language. That's why you all need comedians in your lives. Because we like to point these things out. And it's funny. Because it's true for the most part. And let's look at the African Union's silencing of the guns. Now. And then let's go with the UN goal of making sure that again, silencing of the guns. Let's call it that because I don't have time to look for all the bright vocabularies. Let's ask ourselves one question. What do you think would happen if all the countries became at peace and all neighboring countries became lovey-dovey? And okay, maybe not lovey-dovey. That's a little too intimate because, well, last time I checked, all countries are labeled, are given the gender pronoun of she. So if all countries went lovey-dovey, that would be very recipient-like. Huh. That explains why all countries are, why countries are always quarreling. Okay, Juju's not listening. So, thank heavens. Now, quote number one. Good health makes a lot of sense, but it doesn't make a lot of dollars. So, if everyone was healthy, pharmaceutical industry will crumble. The Minister of Health would not have a job. If you work for the Ministry of Health, say goodbye to your job. Now, let's talk about, my line of work. Boy, would this world would suck if everyone was a comedian. Because I'd be like, okay, now who am I going to crack my jokes to? I mean, you all want to crack your jokes to me. That's boring. If everyone was a pastor and a choir boy, that means there will be no war, no crimes. All the companies that make weapons and all their employees would be broke. Reality of our planet. Quote number two. In politics, it doesn't always have to make sense. It just have to make money. Now, that the source of that quote is somewhat, is more often debated by historians. Some historians attribute it to the entire Eagle FM team, but some historians here and there do attribute it to, and some comedians attribute it to France in Angela. That part is still debatable, but it really. You know, the quote itself is dripping with wisdom. That in politics, it doesn't always have to make sense. It just have to make money. Now, that quote gave birth, or more like inspired, the development of the last quote. And the last quote is, politics and common sense are like oil and water when a lot of money is involved. I'm going to repeat that again. Politics and common sense are like oil and water when a lot of money is involved. That quote is attributed to one very smart African. He's Namibian. He's from Kavango East. He's Dr. Igwe Honorable, His Excellency, incumbent Prime Minister, Helmut Mahongo. History records, him as being a very smart man, short and slim, doesn't like fights because he likes his teeth. Wanna go to the grave with all 32 of them, but very smart one. Where is all this coming from? What inspired this show? Well, let's start with this is titled Politics versus Common Sense. Politics and common sense are like oil and water when a lot of money is involved. They don't see eye to eye. JK ni, what's I in Afrikaans? Eye to eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite ofoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ilinawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumuna oijamo ilinawa ninge Fata Fanona, Monica, ko Eagle FM, onoreta tuimwe bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali. Ileko mberewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, nora notatu notatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye. Turns out it's, I thought we were getting robbed. It's December and we live in Windhoek, so. Now, let's move on to my next part of why I'm making the claim that in common sense and politics are like oil and water when a lot of money is involved. Because we have to admit a lot of things in especially in geopolitics doesn't make sense. You just look at the series of events and start going, how are these any different? So last month, that's the month of November, the Trump administration labeled Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, as the leader of the designated. Now these are the words of Marco Rubio, I believe. He was designated as a leader of a designated narco terrorist organization, Cartel de los Soles, which is Spanish for Cartel of the Suns, S-U-N, not S-O-N. So moving on. Well, at this point, after this whole label came out, I was like, okay, you know what? South America is known for some of the most questionable drug cartel characters. Maybe this is true. Okay, well, if that's the case, then Uncle Sam, just go to Venezuela and get this Maduro guy out before he starts destabilizing democracy. And we did not even blink, those of us that like geopolitics, that like to follow these current events. Now, this, I have to admit, in the beginning, that made some of us that are geopolitical fanatics to go, well, presidential narcotics must not be tolerated. That must not be allowed to be a thing. Therefore, let's just send in Uncle Sam to get rid of this, Maduro guy. Just, take him out of office and we put in someone who likes democracy. And you know, because in the name of gender equality and human rights, let's make sure it's a woman who just won Nobel Peace Prize. What a waste of gold. That's what some of us were thinking. So we're like, Trump, go and get him. And, Before Tom Kenny from SpongeBob even had the chance to go, you know, to go with his famous line of a few moments later, the same administration stabbed us in the back. How did they do that? Well, by giving, this is the same Trump administration that turned around after saying, the president of Venezuela is running a cartel and is the leader. And this cartel de los soles is allegedly made up of high profile figures in the Venezuelan central government, and they're headed by the president, as you'd expect. They're headed by the president Nicolas Maduro himself. Now, if that is true, we don't want, central government / drug cartel officials running a country. So in the name of democracy, let's just make sure there are no drug, let's send him to jail. In fact, let's send him to jail. Let's make sure there are no drug cartels outside of jails. And like I pointed out earlier, before Tom Kenny had a chance to go with his famous line of a few moments later, the same administration, that of the Trump administration, gave a whole presidential pardon to the former president of Honduras, Juan Orlando Hernandez. Always struggling to pronounce it. It's Spanish, give me a break. Now, who is Juan? Who is this Juan Orlando Hernandez? Not to be confused with the Orlando Pirates, of course. This is Orlando, but in South America, not South Africa. They're two different Orlandos. One is a football club. Another one was a very questionable figure in the political and drug cartel world. Now, Juan Orlando Hernandez was a former president of a country called Honduras. Now, Honduras is also a country in South America. You can Google the rest. Now, Juan Hernandez, a man who was once accused, according to the BBC, accused as a key figure in a drug trafficking scheme that flooded the American market with over United States, reference, America, the US market with over 400 tons of cocaine. So this is someone who was arrested, I think, in 2020. Was that in 20? He was 2022, and he was sentenced. He was prosecuted and found guilty and sentenced to about 43 years behind bars. That was during the Biden administration. And Trump came out and was like, "You know what? On second thought, you are getting out. All those drugs and arms trafficking charges, you are forgiven." And then we started going, hang on a second. This doesn't make sense now, does it? You are surrounding one country in the same region. You are surrounding one country with with an army and accusing the president of being a drug cartel. And you are giving a presidential pardon to one president who was prosecuted and found guilty of the same charges you are accusing that guy of. So, what's the difference again? This is not about drugs, is it? It has nothing to do with drugs now. Because at this point I'm going... Because if it's about drugs, why is he getting out? And then that's when the quote now of common sense and history, common sense and politics hits me. It doesn't always have to make sense if a lot of money is involved. Now, that is where we take off. Like, officially take off. We have 32 minutes. That's where we officially take off. And now we dive in, we're now going to look at the historical part of it. Why is politics like that? Well, to understand that, let's look at one of my favorite examples of where common sense and politics sort of like part ways. And that part is slavery. transatlantic slavery, to be specific. A lot of people seem to... I'm about to murder someone from marketing.
Mwana paleka ekufombinga lo ela landulako pamwe no Parates de tolundulukile komkalo elongifolo prepaid go sim tofutu ko khulo enyala ke dole fela dike moka sim keshe omwa kwatero shalishe gigabyte omlongo nanano ovo unana tango mito yo ku recharge no kulimone na owawe data konta do iwaya turwa pomo doropa toshininge fimbo keshe olove wa pumbwa ila uli moneno ka Parates go sim koe menti kikesho lo lilipo pepinave emango no malandula fano odo dino kulandurwa power yo next chat stream call with Parates.
Always prepare Parates. Always prepare Parates. Sorry, yeah, just singing. Welcome back to my new festive season segment called The Time Machine, where we use history to explain some of the things that takes place in the political sphere and why politics and common sense doesn't really match from time to time. There are a lot of historical events like that. So, in 1833, the British passed the Slavery Abolition Act after running it for what? Like about, you know, running it for about 200 years? Slavery Abolition Act. Now, this is my favorite part because I'm talking about Britain using their own source, Encyclopedia Colonisa or Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Slavery Abolition Act. In British history, Act of Parliament that abolished slavery in most colonies, not all. Reference to the word most. Doesn't make sense. Now, you have to understand, this is in the 1800s. The US was founded in the 1900s, and they believed, the founders believed that, what, all men are created, what? All men are created equal. Like George Carlin points out that, one thing you don't understand is that, this country we live on was founded by men who believed all men are created equal, but they had slaves. See, why did they believe that all men are created equal, but they had slaves? Again, politics, common sense, you know, go mix when money is involved. Why? Because slavery was free labor for economies that heavily relied on plantations. You needed labor to run an economy that's heavily reliant on plantations. Now, why can't we just turn them into employees? Oh, well, one very simple thing. It's called greed. It's called greed of the highest order. Yeah. So, when you are greedy as heck, and you don't want to share with the proceeds that you are producing, now, so, what do you do? Well, you run around the world, and then create a narrative, very important word to understand if you are interested in geopolitics. Narrative. There is always narrative in politics. Not sometimes, always. There is always a narrative in politics. Now, before we get to that, that's one word I almost forgot to include in my explanation of why politics and common sense doesn't mix. Now, what is narrative? Now, according to Webster's dictionary, a narrative is something that is narrated. A way of presenting or understanding a situation or series of events that reflects and promotes a particular point of view or set of values. You are not telling both sides of the story. You are telling the side of the story that you want everyone to believe. Because you know that if you tell the whole story, they will start questioning yours, your version. Because, well, let's face it, you're lying. You're lying. Now, so a narrative is exactly that. It's a narration. You are just doing a repetitive telling of the same story over and over and over again so that people can believe it. That's in politics, narrative is very, 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 very important, which is why social media influencers are now becoming integral in political narrative pushing. And this is the world over. Except in Africa, no, we're not there yet. No, we're not there yet. We're going to get there, though. We're slowly, you know, but yeah, we're approaching that in a very sluggish way. So, where were we? Slavery Abolition Act of 1833, British History Act of Parliament that abolished slavery in most British colonies, freeing more than 800,000 enslaved Africans in the Caribbean and South Africa, as well as a smaller number in Canada. It received royal assent, aka royal approval. You know, queen approval, in August 28, 1833, but it took effect, you know, it was enforced in 1834. So the British woke up one day and decided, you know what? We're beginning to believe this whole slavery thing is, I think it could be wrong. I'm not putting my finger on it, but I have a sneaky suspicion it could be wrong. After 200 years, you're only figuring out that chaining other people and forcing them to work is wrong. Now, a lot of people seem to think that the British did that because they all of a sudden just developed a conscience and then, you know, a moral compass, which I have a serious problem falling for. Why? It's because if morality was the primary source of that decision, then why did they keep all, and they still do keep all those artifacts, by the way. The one that they didn't steal, they collected. You have to understand. They didn't steal all those, everything that you find in the British Museum now, right now. It wasn't stolen, no. It was collected. But if you go and collect it back, now that would be stealing. You have to understand the language here, very important. They didn't steal, they collected it. But if you go there and collect it back the same way that they collected it from your country, that would be stealing. Language is very important. Now, what led to this decision then? Well, encyclopedia colonizer now, where were we? Several factors. You've heard that. I'm so surprised. Very surprised. My jaw stayed in place. Several factors led to the Act's passage. Britain's economy was in a flux. Of course it was. There's always money involved, people. Was in a flux at the time. And as a new system of international commerce, aka international way of making money, emerged, throw in industrial revolution in that one. Now, as that system, as a new system of international business way, you know, business way of doing things, or a new way of doing business, emerged, its slaveholders in the Caribbean colonies, which were largely focused on sugar production. Can you believe that a whole continent was enslaved because of sugar? What the? Its slaveholding Caribbean colonies, which were largely focused on sugar production, could no longer compete with sugar plantation owners such as Cuba, Brazil merchants, Cuban Brazil merchants, aka businessmen and women, mostly men. Just think businessmen, women at this point. They were there by the tail section of, you know, of politics, economics, family, you name it. Now, merchants began to demand an end to monopolies on the British market held by the Caribbean colonies and pushed instead for free trade. The word free there is very, has a lot of technical explanations to factor in a few exceptions of different skin colors. Now, the persistent struggles of enslaved Africans and growing fear of slave uprising, uprising among plantation owners were among major factors that contributed. Now, you have to understand, transatlantic slavery was an industry. It was a multi-billion dollar industry by today's standards. I think it's safe to say. It was a multi-billion dollar industry. Now, here's one thing you have to ask yourself. These were not free will going people. These were people that were literally kidnapped and they were forced to work on a daily basis. That means you had a lot of expenses to take care of. You needed to feed them if you wanted them to work in a productive way that, you know, well, that led to your, to a productivity of your planta, of your plantation. You needed them to work. Makes sense. See? If you needed them to work, that means you need them to be healthy. You, at least, relatively speaking, of course. You needed them to be healthy. You needed them to be fed. You needed them to be housed. And all these were expenses that were incurred by slave owners. And you have the Industrial Revolution now comes in. Now, the Industrial Revolution gave birth to some new way, less diabolical way of farming. This is where machines are now coming in. So, someone woke up and decided, you know what? This is, in a nutshell, one of the main reasons why the British abolished slavery is because, see, the pros of having, of having slaves was beginning to outweigh the cons. It's the other way around. The cons of being a slaveholder was beginning to outweigh the pros, aka the disadvantages were becoming more overwhelming in comparison to advantages of holding slaves in terms of expenses. It was becoming more and more expensive to hold slaves. And also a lot of people were now just, you know, protesting and forming all these anti-slavery movements and putting a lot of pressure on quote unquote politics. But it had very little to do with that. The money part, like they say, always follow the money. It's always about the money. Which is why I pointed out earlier that politics and common sense are like oil and water when a lot of money is involved. This realization came to the British aristocrat of abolishing slavery in the 1800s. This is an institution that has been running since the late 1400s, early 1500s. 17, almost 300 years that's been running. You're telling me at this point, none of them went, you know what? I think what we are doing is wrong. Why? Because, by the way, the Ottomans did the same thing. And it turns out the word slave is from Slav, aka Slavic people, who are also by, you know, Eastern European. So, slavery was not a skin color thing. It was a greed thing. Skin color was the narrative that was pushed to justify the slaving. Now, if we may hop back in my time machine now, a little bit now, shall we? And we go to way back further than the 1800s. If you find, now, when you find yourself in the late 1400s, early 1500s, you'll find, and to modern day Portugal, you'll find a very annoying guy by the name of Gomes de Zurara. Now, that idiot is the one that was given a tender by, is it King Afonso V of Portugal at the time. And his Prince, is it Prince Henry? Is it Henry, the navigator? Yes. But let's focus on this Gomez guy. This guy wrote a series. He was given a tender to frame a narrative. This is why narrative is important in politics. If you miss the word narrative, you miss everything about geopolitics. Everything. When the U.S. was, confronted with when the U.S. economy was confronted with a very competitive electronic device that emerged in their market called Huawei, what did they say? Did they say, oh my God, this is too advanced for us to compete with, therefore get rid of it? No, no, but boy, that would have made them look like cowards. You have to frame a narrative called national security. Now we're talking. Now, this is not new. Now, we're talking about, what was the narrative on TikTok? National security. Now, that's the narrative that will be pushed by any country, not just the US. That narrative can be used by any country to push foreign devices out of its market. China have done that to US devices, especially in the public sector. They have, I think they have banned most, if not all, public officials from using foreign-owned computers. So, in the name of national security. So, narrative is important in geopolitics. So, even in the 1400s, during the early days of the series of events that led to the full-blown scale of transatlantic slavery, Portugal pioneered the whole movement. Now, the Portuguese knew that if they just run around the world, kidnap people, and then turn them into slaves, their people will look at them and go like, what the heck are you doing? Isn't that immoral? It's called natural law. We are moral human beings. So they had to frame a narrative. First, they looked in their politics and realized, do you know what? What do people look up to? Who do people look up to so much that even if they lied through their teeth, the people are going to believe it? The king. Yeah, we know the king is powerful. The people are going to believe. But we need someone more powerful than the king. That's where the Pope came in. So, King Afonso V was like, well, okay, you know what? You know what? That's a genius idea. If I say something, a lot of those people that don't agree with my way of running things here, they will not agree with me. Not because what I'm going to suggest is just plain nuts, but it's just, some of them just don't like me because, well, I'm the king and they're not. So the best way to do this is to make sure that it comes from the highest authority. Who is the highest authority? Of course, God, the representative on earth himself. Right. Now, King Alfonso was like, we need to put this in writing. Do we have some of the best writers in Portugal? And their version of NASCAM at the time went like, there is this guy. I know a guy. His name is Gomez de Zurara. If you ask that guy to write something up, oh yeah, he's gonna cook it in a way that is so good, the Pope is gonna fall for it. You know, the guy that believes in the Ten Commandments of thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, that guy is gonna help us kill and steal. And boy, were they right. So they ended up finding themselves in a situation where homeboy Gomez de Zurara, you have to understand, is a genius. This guy actually literally wrote a book that gave birth. He called them the Chronicles. This piece of literature gave birth to race-based slavery. For most of the race-based slavery is attributed to that guy's works. And now, because in these documents, race was important. Racial, you know, race-based slavery was important. But the most important, what laid, you know, the most important part of this enslavement must have been based on something that the, you know, that the Pope held so dear to his heart. Religion. They just, these guys just went to the Pope and told him, you know, somewhere in this continent called Africa, there are people. Those people don't believe the God that we believe. Therefore, that makes them less human than we are. So if you can just give us a blessing, we will go there and convert them to believe the God that we believe. We are going to convince them using a sword. Now, here's the thing. We know what you believe, here, Ogapop. We believe that, do not steal, do not kill, do not covet someone's wife, do not covet someone's property. But there's just one tiny problem. We are coveting their properties, we are coveting their wives, we are coveting their resources, and we want to go and steal, but we know that we shouldn't steal, but we are going to steal. Please, Father, forgive us. Yeah. Oga was like, did you say natural resources? You know, I can imagine the Pope going, I don't know about this, because look, nothing will shake my faith. Nothing will shake my faith. People are not supposed to slave other people because Jesus died for all of us. And the king was like, well, they have a lot of diamond and gold. And if we can just get, they're also hard workers. Did we mention the hard workers? Now, if we can just get some of them and put them in plantation, we're going to make a lot of money. Did we mention that they will also be working in vineyards to produce grapes that will make the wine for the Holy Communion? Yeah, that too. At this point, I'm looking at the Pope going, yeah. On second thought, the Bible is not very literal. It can be interpreted depending on circumstances, of course. So, I say, go ahead with it. Just, you have my blessing, go. You have my blessing. You can just go. Go and convert these Saracens. I still have no idea what that word means. I still have no idea, what the word, something means. Now. So, the Portuguese decided to just, first of all, land in modern day Guinea. And then they, you know, started to, that basically, gave birth to, that gave birth to, that's one of those major series of events that led to the full scale operation of the, what's this, transatlantic slavery. Now, the doctrine of discoveries, on the other hand, are very interesting, you know, a series of documents that still impact international law to this day. But the doctrine of discoveries are coming from the 1400s, late 1400s. Now, I have 7 minutes. My favorite part that cements my point of view on the fact that because it is a fact, when there's a lot of money involved, politics and common sense are like oil and water. They don't mix. In fact, they go different directions. You see, in the 1450s, the Roman Pontiff, aka the Pope, wrote a series of documents they called them papal bulls. They're the ones that gave the Portugal a green light to just go there and quote unquote convert people into our beliefs. Just go there and convert them in the name of the God that we worship. Now, that was in the 1450s. Now, let's look at it this way. 1450s, King Afonso of Portugal. This is a sovereign nation at the time. Superpower, I'm telling you. Goes to the Pope and says, I would like to enslave a bunch of people in the name of God. And the Pope is like, no, you are not going to do that. King Afonso is like, there is a lot of money to be made. The Pope is like, oh, you have my blessing. My son, go and convert them. You have my blessing. And this was in the 1450s. Now, fast forward to the 1540s. This is just, this is about 1450, for Doctrine of Discoveries, that was until 1452. And, 1400s, the series of documents known as papal bulls that justified the expansion of Portugal into modern day parts of Guinea, this East Africa, those were given to Portugal by the Pope, you know. And in the late 1500s, the same, you know, institution gave the same blessing to the Spanish to expand into the Americas. Something interesting happened in between. Late 1400s, Portugal goes to the Pope and goes like, I would like to enslave some people. Pope was like, no, you cannot do that. And the king of Portugal is like, did I mention we are going to make a lot of money? The Pope is like, excellent. You should have started with that. You should next time start with that. You have my blessing, my son. Oh yeah, go. Now, mid-1500s, King Henry VIII, he's tired of his mjolo and wants to get rid of his wife. Now, usually he'll just separate the head from the body, but then, you know, this was his first marriage, so he just wanted a regular divorce, like every first timer. So he goes to the Pope and is like, you know what, I would like to divorce my wife. And the Pope is like, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. I just gave someone a green light to go and molest and do a bunch of despicable things to people. I know what you're thinking, that if I gave someone a permission to go and kidnap, kill, and torture, you think I will give you a green light to divorce your wife? The answer is no. You have to understand, the God we worship is very strict on divorce. He's okay with killing and kidnapping, but thereby divorce. Nope, he will not entertain that. What the behind? Now, that was mid 1500s. Late 1500s. The King of Spain goes to the same, you know, guy. Actually, so it's, it was in, you know, King Henry VIII. They were all dealing with the different popes, but the same institution, same WhatsApp group. King of Spain, shortly after King Henry was now pissed, he came back to England and decided, you know what, if your God is not okay with the divorce, I'll start mine. We'll call it the Church of England. And now, my church will be fine with the divorce, by the way, unlike your church. See your life. So they decided, you know what, I'm going to start my church, and the first thing that will be okay in my church is a man can get a divorce. The thing is, he did not even exercise that right. It's, even after starting his church, and his church was okay with divorce, and he didn't have to ask anyone for permission to divorce anymore, he kept executing his wives, plural, instead of divorcing them. Again, politics, common sense. Separate directions. King of Spain, goes to the Pope and tells him, you know what, I would like to go to South America and do the exact same, actually the Americas, and do the exact same thing that Portugal has been doing in Africa. Do you mind if I had your blessing? The Pope was like, did you by any chance run into King Henry? Can you imagine, he came here to ask for a divorce. That guy is not serious. You said you want to kidnap and kill some people. Yeah, you have my blessing. You can go. Did you say King Henry was here for divorce? Yo, this guy doesn't know the God we worship. That guy hates divorce so much, he's okay with killing and torture and mass rape. He's okay with that. But divorce is a no-go.
Attention, residents of Namibia's communal areas. This is a crucial announcement from the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. Please listen carefully and share this message with your family members, neighbors and friends. Stop the practice of buying or selling communal land. Why? Because communal land in Namibia is state land and cannot be sold in any manner. Engaging in any transactions related to its sale or purchase is strictly illegal. The Communal Land Reform Act, Act No. 5 of 2002, explicitly prohibits such activities. Consequences of illegal land transactions. Legal penalties. Violators may face fines and imprisonment. Community harmony disruption. Selling or buying communal land can lead to land disputes and tensions within our communities. What you need to know. Communal land belongs to all of us. It is a shared resource that should benefit everyone. Preserve our heritage. By respecting communal land, we honor our cultural legacy and protect our environment. Report illegal activities. If you suspect any illegal land transactions, please report them to the traditional authority, communal land board, or the ministry office nearest to your area. Let's work together to safeguard our communal land resources for future generations. The ministry will not be liable for any loss of land resources as a result of the illegal sale of communal land. Remember, communal land is precious. Let's keep it safe and secure for all. Thank you for your cooperation. The radio message is produced with financial support from the Government of the Republic of Namibia and the Federal Republic of Germany through the German Development Bank, KfW. For more information, please contact the ministry office nearest to your area or the Public Relations Office of the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform at the following telephone number, 061-208-7604. All official correspondence must be addressed to the Executive Director.
Welcome back. And that brings us to the end of our show for today. But to wrap it up, politics and common sense is like oil and water when there's a lot of money involved. We went through three main events to prove that point. The late 1400s, the King of Portugal went to the Holy See, aka the Vatican City, to ask the Pope about enslaving a bunch of people. And the Pope was like, fine, go ahead. Mid-1500s, King Henry went to the same Holy See to ask for a blessing to divorce his wife. The guy said, absolutely not. And late 1500s, Spain went to the same Holy See to ask for the permission to go and torture and murder South American, basically South North American indigenous, and the guys were like, sure, go ahead. Why am I making fun of Catholics? No, I'm making fun of politics. Because for the most part, these two are not very distinguished. The fact that this was okayed does not mean that it's every Catholic worshipper's problem. Actually, I'm hoping, you know, I'm assuming Catholics have a sense of humor, or I'm so getting punched in the teeth today. But I'm just saying, I love history. And every time I read history, I'm reminded over and over and over again that politics and common sense don't mix. And religion have been roped a lot into the political sphere. Just look at what's going on in Palestine and Gaza. All that is in the name of what? God gave us this. It's always about religion. It's always God told me. Funny thing is, have you ever realized God never told an empire to go and develop another country? You know, just give them gold and diamonds, let them develop industrially as a blessing from me. Nope. It's always go and conquer. I have so many questions, but that brings us to the end of the show for today. Until tomorrow now, we're going to be meeting from 7:30 to 10. It's still a time machine, my holiday slot that's going to be running until the 9th of, my holiday slot that will be running until the, my holiday show name that will be running until the 9th of January. But, I'll only be doing it from 7:30 to 10, from tomorrow until the 2nd of January. When Mike comes back, he's gonna come up with his own holiday theme ideas to, you know, to keep you guys entertained. Then I will see if I will still have a voice left, or I will just disappear for a week. Make that decision in a few. So for you, it's raining here. It's raining. Die rain gefal, you saw in Kleinwintuk, Biki, and it's getting a little hot by the minute. But until tomorrow. 7:30 to 10. The time machine with Helmut. We just mix humor and history. Don't worry. On Christmas, we're talking about the Norwegians and how they contributed to a lot of your Christmas rituals that you practice today. That's going to be my favorite part. I'm looking forward to that. And also a lot of birthdays on that day. Still loving it. Just in case she's listening. Until tomorrow, you'll stay blessed.